Good morning, good evening, whenever, wherever you may be listening from. I'm John Vogel, and welcome into the John Vogel Show, presented by Anchor, the best place for you to start your podcast. Welcome into the show, guys. It's a Friday edition. We've got a really great guest on here. And you have to understand that when we bring on a guest, when I bring somebody onto the show, we bring them on because they know their shit. And the guy we've got today, he's on top of it. Justin Gamble from NFL Draft Bible is joining the show, talking NFL draft, talking some really good stuff. It's a great conversation. And it's very, he's very knowledgeable. He shares his knowledge easily. And, you know, that's why we bring people on the show. Because they know stuff. They know the shit. They're on top of it. And that's what we like. That's what you guys need to hear. First, as usual, we're going to get into some other stuff going on before we get into this conversation here with Justin. This is kind of a hot topic right now in the NFL. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it. And I'll tell you why in a second. But the Tennessee Titans are facing massive penalties from the NFL after breaking protocol with coronavirus, COVID-19. Here's the deal. You basically got 23 players and personnel that have tested positive in Nashville, Tennessee. This sucks for me. I live right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. A lot of you guys know this. And the Titans are kind of a soft spot for me as a result. I will root for them on Sundays. I like them. I like a lot of the players. I like the coaches. So this is a little bit of a soft spot, as you will, for me. This is the Tennessee Titans. And they've been a very good team this year. They're 3-0, looking at a lot of positives. Here's why we're not going to spend a lot of time on this today, because no penalty has yet been administered by the league. That is why we're not going to spend a lot of time on this topic today, because there's not all that much to talk about other than they violated some protocols. We're not entirely sure what a lot of those protocols are quite yet. We know that many players gathered at a couple different schools in the Nashville area to practice after being told by the NFL and the NFLPA not to gather for these practices. And basically, when the NFLPA tells you to do something and you don't do it, there's not much that they can do to protect you. They'll do everything they can to protect their clients and make things better for NFL players, but when you do something they tell you not to do, there's not much that you can do or they can do to keep you safe and to protect you from the penalties and anything else that the league is going to administer. And that's kind of the spot that the Tennessee Titans are in right now. And it's their own fault. So that's basically what's going on with the Titans. The type of penalty, look, what they're talking about right now is forfeiting games, massive penalty, fines, draft picks, so on and so forth. They're talking about some massive penalties. I don't know if any of that is true. How many times have we heard massive penalties upcoming? This is going to happen. That's going to happen. It's going to be very, very bad. And it doesn't go that way. I feel like that happens very often. And I'm not saying that this is another one of those instances. This is another one of those times where it's going to be like that. I am pointing out that that does happen a lot. The media does hype things up and try to make it into something that it's not. That's why I don't like to associate myself as media. But regardless, that's kind of what we're looking at here. All right? These are the kind of things that the NFL could potentially be penalizing the NFL, the Tennessee Titans for. We're going to find out here. Probably by the time the next episode on this show drops, the penalties will have been assessed, I would imagine. But look, enough on that. Until we actually have the penalties, we don't really have too much that we can talk about, opinions to make, so on and so forth. I don't make these decisions in the NFL, and I'm really glad I don't. I'm really glad that's not my job. But let's talk some college. And when I say college, I really mean SEC. Because look, that's the premier conference. I'm gonna tell you something right now that a lot of people aren't normally willing to tell you. All right? So first off, I like watching the NFL, Because the strategies on the field, when you turn on the All-22, the strategies on the field, you see almost as clear as day. You can really read and understand the concepts that the teams are running because they're all professionals. They all have been doing this a long time. They get paid a lot of money to do it. They're the best at what they do. And so the number of mistakes that are made on the field are very small and minuscule. Now, the next level of football in terms of trying to watch it, what I think is the perfect blend of amateurism and professionalism, is SEC football. There is a difference when you put on the All-22 and you watch it as compared to even the Big Ten or the Pac-12 or the Big 12. There is a massive difference in the quality of football that is on the screen. The number of mistakes. And you see, the NFL drafts more SEC players every year than any other conference, and it's not even close. So the point here is the SEC is the premier conference in college football, and the reason that is because they have more players in their league that are professional type players, and you see the results on the tape. Okay, so that's the point that I'm trying to make with this, and why we spend a lot of time on the SEC on this show and not a lot of time on the other show, on the other conferences. But here's the interesting thing: Georgia is playing Tennessee this weekend. I said you need to watch Georgia this weekend. They're going to be on CBS at 3:30 Eastern, the primetime SEC slot, playing the 2-0 Tennessee Vols. And this is a big game for a lot of reasons, because we have a really good idea where Georgia is right now. We just watched them dismantle Auburn last week, and Auburn did not have the ability to go toe-to-toe with them in the trenches. On both sides of the football, that's why they dominated the way that they did. Now, when you look at the Tennessee Vols, they have the front to compete with the Georgia Bulldogs this year. And that's where this game is going to get interesting. You've got Trey Smith, who could potentially be, you know, a top first-round pick in the NFL draft if he stays healthy. He is one of the best interior offensive linemen in the nation right now. He is a phenomenal player, a phenomenal prospect. So you've got him. Cade Mays just got cleared to play. He's a transfer from Georgia who came to Tennessee. He's probably going to be playing right guard. All right, so you have a very solid front. Both teams have three really good running backs, somewhat unproven quarterbacks, and somewhat unproven receiver corps. So offensively, these teams are very similar. I would kind of lean on the Volunteers' offense being a little bit better. Now, the difference is who's going to have the better defense. Both of these defenses are very good right now. And the reason I'm going to say that right now, the thing that you have to understand about the matchup that is going to be on the field between these two head coaches is Kirby Smart, former defensive coordinator at Alabama, and Jeremy Pruitt as the head coach of Tennessee, former defensive coordinator at the University of Alabama. These guys worked together. When Kirby took the head coach job at Georgia, Jeremy Pruitt replaced him at Alabama and did a better job with his defense than Kirby did. It was a new style of defense that Alabama had never played before. They were aggressive, they were fast, they were physical. That's the defense that Jeremy Pruitt is building at Tennessee. And it's a lot different than the conservative, let's play cover two, keep everything in front of his defense that Kirby Smart plays. And that's where you have to wonder, which offense is going to score more points? And secondly, I think the key to this game coming up tomorrow is the team that scores defensively wins this game. Whether it be a pick six, whether it be a fumble recovery, whether it be a blocked field goal, whatever, the team that scores defensively wins this football game. That's how close I think these two teams are right now. And it's going to be a great matchup. You're going to have to tune into it because it is going to be phenomenal to watch these teams play. It's going to be a good game. I am sure of it. This is really a... We have a good idea where Georgia is. We really don't know where Tennessee is. They dismantled Missouri last week. Great. Alabama did that the week before them. They beat South Carolina. South Carolina was pretty competitive last week and remained competitive when they played Florida, who might be the best team in this division right now. This is what we're looking at. This conference has gotten really good. Okay. There's one discrepancy at head coach that you're just kind of like, he does not belong in the SEC. One school has a coach right now that doesn't belong in the SEC, and that's Vanderbilt. And that's it. Everyone else has shown, or is showing as we speak, the ability to be competitive in this league. That's crazy. This is not something that we're accustomed to seeing in the SEC. There's usually bad coaches, but it is literally, the SEC has cleaned up their stuff. They are the premier conference, and you're looking at this. It is going to be fun watching the next 8 games unfold for each team in this conference. There's so many good head coaches. There's so many good players. And a lot of these teams are so close competitively. It is going to be fun to see who rises to the front and wins the SEC crown this year in a 10-game conference schedule, which I really wouldn't mind them keeping. This has been phenomenal so far, and I think it's going to continue to be as the season goes on. But with that, we're going to take a break. We're going to go to commercial. When we come back, Justin Gamble joins the show. We're talking NFL draft, NFL draft prospects, KJ Costello, and a good bit more next, coming up here on the John Vogel Show. Guys, do you like the John Vogel Show? Well, listen, John Vogel Show is always looking for your support. So if you haven't checked it out already, be sure that you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, turn on notifications, and get notified every time a new podcast episode drops. Next, check out anchor.fm. Check out our listener support section. You can directly support the show right there. Also, John Vogel Show has a Patreon. So if you're interested in contributing there, be sure to check that out at patreon.com/John Vogel Show. This is the John Vogel Show. I hope that I thank you for your support, and I hope you continue to listen here in the near future. Welcome back to the John Vogel Show, now joined by Justin Gamble with NFL Draft Bible. Justin is not a part of groupthink. That's why he's on the show. So, Justin, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, buddy. I'm excited to be here, excited to meet you and talk some ball.
All right, awesome. So, looking at probably a 15, 20-minute segment, if that works with you. It's ops, probably. It's usually where we kind of level out. So, going to get started. NFL Draft is kind of an interesting year. It's a little bit crazy with all the different stuff going on. COVID has postponed several college football seasons for teams. What are you hoping the NFL does with the NFL draft to kind of help everybody along?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm probably not the guy to ask because I thought about it for a few days since we talked about me coming on the show. And I don't really know, and I kind of tweeted about this the other day about the NFL, and people kind of chimed in and said, there's really no fair way to do this. If you're safe and go by all the protocols, it's almost not fair. If you open things up to where everyone's on an even playing field and you kind of let things go as they normally are, then it's not necessarily safe. So It's obviously, we're not going to have Senior Bowl, I'm assuming. The combine is going to be interesting. I feel like they could probably still make the combine work, but that's tough. If anything, maybe this year at the combine, there could be, some 7-on-7 or 3-on, just something to where you get more of like a game feel vibe, because without the all-star circuit this year, that's where a lot of guys go and rise. A lot of prospects, Jimmy Garoppolo, Carson Wentz, Daniel Jones, right? A lot of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So that we can say, this all-star stuff doesn't matter, or like just go back to the game film, but let's be realistic. And, you know, a lot of these things really help improve a player's stock or drop a player's stock. But for the most part, what you really care about is how it'll improve stock. So I think the NFL is going to have a tough job coming up with some way to not only make it easier for teams and more fair for them so that they can get actual tools or actual ways to evaluate these players, you know, correctly. But it's also, it's got to be something that's fair to the players, safe but fair enough to where they at least get somewhat of a shot to do what everyone's done in the past, and that is, you know, obviously raise your draft stock, makes more money on draft day.
Get that chance. Yeah, and that opportunity means everything for a lot of these guys. Which one of these guys that could potentially make a lot of ground in one of these?
Here we
We've
go.
here we go. KJ Costello, Mississippi
Yeah.
State, transfer from Stanford.
Yeah.
So it was funny because when I invited you on the show and then I put out a tweet about KJ where I said he's first round pick if he stays healthy this year. And then the next day you tweeted, without seeing mine, you said KJ Costello is a worse version of Clayton Thorson. And
Wait, did
so,
I say worse? I think I just said he's Clayton Thorson. Did I say worse? I
no,
said
you
he
said
might have.
worse
I might have
delivery.
like worse delivery or something.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was worse delivery. So you said he was
Yeah.
worse than Clayton Thorson. So like, let's get started there. What is there with KJ that you're kind of holding back on? Because I think this is a really intriguing prospect to kind of talk about.
You know what's kind of weird, and I was telling a buddy about this the other day. When he was at Stanford and he got to throw less, I found myself liking him more because I see this big, tall prototype who can stretch the field. The ball doesn't necessarily come out pretty. I don't love his delivery, but he's a little bit mobile. He can make some plays off of play action. He just felt like, oh, this is the prototype, or maybe the old prototype, but at least I feel like there's something I can build off of. And maybe the unknown was what made me like him more. Now that in 2 games I've seen him throw like 60 times a game, it's done the opposite for me. And I'm like, you know, you'll see a period of 10, 20 throws a game where you're like, eesh. You know, and Stanford wouldn't have let him throw that many times, so maybe those throws wouldn't have been hidden. But now that I've actually seen him air it out, I kind of like am nitpicking more. And I see his delivery, and I see the ball not spinning the way I want it to. And I see him kind of in a wide open system for summer. I mean, I know it's his first year in this new system, but in something so wide open and so quarterback friendly, just making bonehead decisions and going out and dropping one against Arkansas. It just doesn't sit well. And it's not like his evaluation's over. I'm not that guy who ever writes a guy off right away. But after seeing him at Stanford and seeing him last 2 weeks, yeah, that tweet about Clayton Thorson, I was kind of just like, this is not pretty football, and it's not pretty quarterback play, and it just felt kind of like I'm seeing a guy who looks the part, but he's not really delivering, and that's exactly how I felt about Thorson.
Literally, what popped off at me was when I saw him against LSU. I don't remember there being a clean pocket any time he threw against LSU. So I was a little bit, I wasn't really nitpicking with his, the little things there because he was making it work, throwing 60 times a game against that LSU defense that was just all over him. I think Arkansas, you kind of see the dip. He took a lot of contact against LSU. He was got beat up. He threw 60 times that game. That's crazy. And then goes out there and throws what, another 50 times against Arkansas. So
Yeah, true, true.
I liked the ability to play under pressure that we didn't really see at Stanford as much. And that's because Stanford, they get the play action rolling after they get the run game rolling, and he doesn't really see pressure. So that's what really popped off the screen at me. And if you look at a lot of these guys that get drafted early now, it's their ability to play under pressure. So that's what I was thinking when I saw it and what popped off the screen at me with him.
You're not wrong. You're absolutely not wrong. I think seeing him against Arkansas, though, and this might have been part of him being just beat up and beat to hell and underpreparated a little bit, or underprepared. What am I saying? Underprepared. Just based off of how everything's going right now, you know, or maybe they underestimated Arkansas. But the amount of like easy throws that he was missing was kind of shocking. And
That's fair.
I thought this is a quarterback who I expect to make the layups because of his pedigree, because of his age. I'm like, this guy will make the easy throws and the tough ones, let's see. But when he started missing some easy layups, I was like, dude. But I mean, it's just the first 2 games. It's the beginning of the year. A lot of times guys will have 5 horrible games and 5 great games when they finally get comfortable. So like I said, I'm not writing him off. He still has some intriguing tools. I just don't know if I see a guy that could rise to the first round, but you know, I've been wrong a lot in the past, so who knows?
Is there anybody that you came into this year you didn't really have on your radar, weren't too interested in, that's popped off at you in the first few weeks of action?
As far as quarterback,
This could be any position.
shoot, any position. Yeah, I mean, watching that Georgia Auburn game, Tyson Campbell. He, I mean, him and Seth Williams had a battle. Those are two guys that are going to be problems in the NFL. And Tyson Campbell last year got benched. We knew the type of recruit he was coming out of high school. We knew that he had tools, but it was like, are you good or are you just, you know, an athlete? And Saturday against Auburn, man, what him and Steph Williams were doing back and forth was amazing. That's a big kid that can turn and run and play the ball. He can do a lot of things that are pretty special. And then they had Adam Anderson, outside linebacker for Georgia. He had two sacks and he had a few pressures that didn't end in sacks, but I was like, who is this kid? And I look him up. He's 6'5". He's listed at 225. But he might weigh a little more. He might not. I don't know. But either way, the frame is there to put on more weight. And, I mean, some of this kid, the movement skills, too. The movement skills. I remember one time he set up the Auburn left tackle. He, you know, sets him up outside, darts inside. Bo Nix, who can run. Kid can run. Darts outside. And Anderson bends back underneath the tackle and chases Bo and makes him throw an errant throw. I don't think that might have been when he got grounded for. I don't know. But just watching a 6'5 kid with that kind of length move this way, I don't want to say first round, but I mean, those are first round trades all day. So, a consistent season. And it's rare to have Georgia pass rushers. We haven't had really high level Georgia pass rushers in a while. So, it's kind of cool to see the Georgia defense flying around and clearly throwing out some NFL level prospects right now.
And that entire defense is 4 or 5 star guys, every one of them.
Yeah, they're all just nasty athletes. Auburn and Georgia game is going to be crazy. They play each other, right?
Yeah, they just play each other, yeah. We got Georgia-Tennessee this week.
Alabama-Georgia play each other this year. That's what I was saying. Yeah. Alabama, yeah, okay. That's going to be a fun game because those defenses just can move. And that's good. I know NFL scouts are limited this year as to what they can watch and what they can go to, but I'm assuming that press box is going to be full with as many that can fit.
So here's a question because you brought up Alabama. Okay. Mac Jones has been pretty solid here the first couple games in action, and it was really good against A&M. So is this benefiting from NFL-level receivers across the board, or is this Mac Jones, like, should we start taking him seriously?
Did you see my tweet the other day when I...
No, I didn't. I have no idea.
Okay. I just put out a question, and some people jumped on it. Like, I was saying he was a first-rounder, but I just asked. I was kind of thinking out loud on Twitter, and I just said, can Mac Jones be a first-rounder? Like, is that possible? You know, everyone kind of like, oh, Tua was, so Mac can, and some people were like, Mac's horrible, I don't know, whatever. But I was just like, I'm just curious, because you watch some of these throws, and some of the easy ones, he throws dimes. That's great. That's what you need from quarterbacks. The easy throws, they need to be good. They need to be perfect, right? But then some of these difficult throws, I mean, he's making on time, he's making with decisiveness, he's making accurately, and he has an NFL-level arm. He's got size. He's got poise. I mean, you can't really knock him off his game, and I think that's probably because he's been at Alabama for a while. He played Michigan last year. He played Auburn last year. He's seen the big games. He's not new to the spotlight. So I think you see that moxie out of him already, but then you say, what are his traits? What are his parts? Is he the sum of his parts? And he's looking like the sum of his parts. And he might only end up being a second-round guy, but I think you're looking at someone that could be an NFL-level starter. And that might be premature, but based on what you've seen so far, I think it's – kind of irresponsible to be like, no, he's not Tua or he's not other quarterbacks that we've seen. I don't know. He's making some sick throws. There was one he hit Waddle in the end zone, and Waddle had a yard or two to work with, and he dropped it right there for him and did everything Waddle needed, which was let me not work. Let me just grab the football and stop my feet so I can get my feet in, and that's it. And he did it. So I don't know. I think Auburn or Alabama might have found that guy that kind of elevates their offense, even a little more than Tua can, to a degree, just because of their differing skill sets and the way the coaches are kind of handling them. But I don't know. I'm on board with Mac Jones so far. I know Twitter, it's, for some reason, it's unpopular on Twitter, but that's just there for you. So
most of your takes are unpopular on Twitter. And that's why you're here.
This is because I'm wrong all the time. I don't know. We got to figure it out.
Hey, that's the thing is like the best part about doing NFL draft and scouting and covering things is you're going to be wrong 50% of the time, and that's okay.
Yeah. Or more, but I'll try harder every year. I'll try to get better.
So I have to ask this question to everybody now because I've been seeing it pop up a lot, and it's a really intriguing question. Ja'Marr Chase or Jalen Waddle?
That is what I have right here, some Ja'Marr Chase notes, actually. And I think it's going to – I think the thing about Waddle is he's already kind of shown this year that not only does he have legit speed, I think some last year – I think it's because of the way he runs, too. He runs like he's escaping something. You know, he's like herky-jerky, and it's not the pretty, gorgeous stride you see from a lot of the speedsters. But this year you kind of see in a few of the games and a few of the plays he's made that regardless of what his stride looks like or what his gait is, he looks – or he's fast. The kid's fast. Yeah. He's probably 4.3 fast, right? So we see that. We see, oh, he's small. Can he play big? He's so far he's played as big as he can. He's gone up and what is it? That play, was it Texas A&M where he jumps over two guys, or was that the first game? I don't know.
That was the first game. I guess Missouri, okay. Yes.
He's gone up and made some plays. You've seen the strong hands. You've seen his ability to understand leverage and separation and everything. So he's going to play bigger than he is, right? He might be a legit game breaker. I mean, this looks like Tyreek Hill, but maybe with a little higher pedigree coming out. Where Ja'Marr Chase is interesting because I have right here, is he greater than the sum of his parts? Because on tape, it's not like he's a burner. He's fast. But is he 4.4 flat fast? Is he 4.5 flat fast? What's his height? Is he 5'11"? Is he 6'1"? It's kind of hard to get some of these things. So, but then you watch the games and you say, you know, oh, he's not that fast and he doesn't look that big, but he's consistently dominating people when they throw him the ball. I watched him a lot of games last year where he kind of got locked up for a while in the court, and you know, Burrow would look the other way. But then when Burrow was like, "F it, I'm throwing it to Chase anyway," Chase made the play. So it's like you can't argue with the dominant fashion that he does things in. He's definitely an alpha. He's definitely dangerous after the catch. I think it's going to be one of those. He's going to be one of those polarizing prospects where some people don't like that he's not this route runner, that he's kind of clumsy in and out of his breaks, and that his feet look a little heavy sometimes. But other people are going to just say, well, he dominates on a consistent basis on the big stage. So what are you doing? You know, draft him. For me right now, I think Waddle's my guy just because I know what I'm getting. And I know he can pretty much do anything I ask him to do minus, you know, 50-50 balls in the red zone. But overall, I think Waddle's a game breaker. And I think Chase, unfortunately, we won't get any more tape of him for now. But I think he's a high-level guy too. It's just going to be a little bit more of a risk based on the fact that he's not going to be Odell Beckham in testing. He's not going to do the freaky numbers that you wish you saw. But he's one of those guys you have to go back to the game tape and just say, look, he's dominating people. Anytime they throw him the ball, he's figuring it out. He's coming up with it. It is what it is.
Because that's one of my big concerns with Chase is his ability to separate. Yeah. I don't see a lot of that. And I see also Joe Burrow. Yeah, he makes the throws. Burrow, one thing you got to give him credit for, it's the fact that I think he can make any throw within 20 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Oh, yeah.
When you start going deep, that's where Burrow kind of starts to waver a little bit. But yeah. You saw him putting these perfect throws in there to Ja'Marr Chase that you just cannot defend. And I have to wonder if that was part of it, because I'm not seeing Chase get a lot of separation normally.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like so many of his receptions, you'd watch the whole play on the All-22, and you're like, oh, he never really, like, won the rep. He didn't win. And he didn't get off the line. He got jackhammered and roundhoused at the line of scrimmage, but somehow he made it work. Like, what the hell happened here? But that's the thing. It's like he's making it work. So what do? You know, is he a Laquon Treadwell or is he something else like Michael Gallup? You know, like what's his range? What kind of prospect was he? But I think the fact that it's obvious on tape that he's an alpha and that he wants the ball and he wants to fight dudes for 60 minutes a game, that's great because he's not going to stop working and he's not going to stop John and he's not going to stop fighting. So you know you're getting all that out of him. Next, it's just, what are his traits and can he really compete with high level NFL corners for 60 minutes? I think some of the better corners are for sure going to give him problems, but maybe he's that guy that kind of blossoms as he gets into his NFL career after a slower start and kind of figures out his limitations, gets a little stronger, gets a little faster, and he becomes dangerous versus just a consistent, solid guy.
I'm not normally a comp guy, but I think Reggie Wayne is a pretty good comp for him.
I can see that. I had a buddy that said Pierre Garçon or Roddy White. He's weird because I think his play style doesn't match his body type, doesn't match his speed, doesn't match. No, and it's like, who is this? He's been put together by it looks like three different people put him together and are like, well, just mix this trait with this trait with this trait with this size. And he doesn't really fit any prototype or any like specific thing. So that's another reason why teams are going to be like, well, who can we compare him to, or who do we think he's going to be like? Like, good luck. I don't know. Anyone, literally. You know what I mean? Michael Gallup or Reggie Wayne or Pierre Garçon or a complete bust, or I don't know. Luckily, I'm not drafting him. So I'm going to evaluate them. But
you can, maybe you can tell people a little bit about your role with NFL Draft Bible and what you guys are doing this year.
I haven't been completely involved with Draft Bible lately just because I've been busy and doing other things. We are starting a podcast soon, me, Joe Tide, and as known on Twitter, Sports Ruckus, and it'll be through Draft Bible, and they'll be kind of hosting us and everything. So look for that. But overall, man, I think, Draft Bible's doing cool stuff with their scouting sessions and all kinds of guests. And I know Jordan Reed is on soon. Jordan Reed is one of the coolest followers on Twitter. Also one of the most knowledgeable and consistent evaluators out there. So if you don't follow, I don't even know his handle, but just look up Jordan Reed. He works for
Jay Reed NFL. Yep.
Jay Reed NFL. Dude is awesome. Find him. Follow my guy Sports Ruckus, Joe Tie-Dye, where he's a producer for NBC Sports Network, Chicago. He's awesome. I know he put out some Herbert plays and some Justin Herbert stuff today. Zach Hicks, Mark Jarvis, just some really consistent dudes that are putting in work consistently on Twitter. I think it's not always about finding guys that you agree with. It's about finding guys that are willing to talk to you and at least hear out your opinion and just say, I'm willing to hear your questions because it might make me think about certain things. And I think on our podcast, that's what we want to do when we meet Joe and Sports Ruckus. We want it to be more of an open discussion and not tell you how it is, but kind of make you think about why this could be this way or why this isn't this way. You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of scouting, especially on Twitter, lacks so much nuance where this guy's good or bad. This guy's wide receiver 3. Well, that doesn't tell me what the F he does or what he is or what he's going to be. Tell me more. Don't rank your players. Evaluate them all, and then I can choose from them if I'm a real decision maker in the NFL. But I think finding guys that are willing to do that or just kind of hear different points of views is really important. And I think you're one of those guys that has been a pretty good follow on Twitter as well, just because you're willing to at least hear out, you know, the other opinions and the reasons behind certain thoughts and stuff like that. So
I appreciate you saying that, Justin. Yeah. Hey, dude, I appreciate you taking the time too to come on here, hop on here. I know we kind of got pushed off a little bit, and that's fine. It's been great.
My pleasure, man. This has been awesome.
Yeah, dude. I'll totally have you on again here in the future. I'm starting to get a good rotation of guys, so it's a little bit harder to fit you all in as consistently as I want. Might have to extend the show. You know, we're getting good, great ratings right now, so.
I don't, dude. We'll have you on our show when it comes out, too, so.
Heck yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. Hey, dude, you have a great rest of the night. Take it easy.
As well, buddy. Thank you.
Guys, do you like the John Vogel Show? Well, listen, John Vogel Show is always looking for your support. So if you haven't checked it out already, be sure that you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, turn on notifications, and get notified every time a new podcast episode drops. Next, check out anchor.fm, check out our listener support section. You can directly support the show right there. Also, John Vogel Show has a Patreon. So if you're interested in contributing there, be sure to check that out at patreon.com/John Vogel Show. This is the John Vogel Show. I hope that I thank you for your support, and I hope you continue to listen here in the near future. If you're not already following Gamma on Twitter, you need to. Welcome back into the John Vogel Show, presented by Anchor, the best place for you to start your podcast. If you're looking at getting into Anchor, if this is something that a podcast is something that you've been wanting to do for a long time, Anchor makes it super easy to get into the game and to get into the game quickly. Go to anchor.fm for more information today. All right. So Gamma brought up some really good points across the board, I think, especially, you know, with Mac Jones, the Chase and Waddle discussion, you know, stuff like that. This is something that I'm starting to see across the board. And this is why you play football. When you can, when you have the ability to. Because literally, this is what I'm starting to see across, you know, football in general, across the board. If you're playing, the chances of you elevating your stock and making yourself a more valuable prospect is tremendously better. And you're seeing this play out with Jalen Waddle. Because when we came into the season, there was nobody. Nobody would have taken Jalen Waddle over Ja'Marr Chase. that was just, it was just not going to happen, man. Like, everybody knew Waddle was good, but he was wide receiver 4 at Alabama. How good could he really be? And now we're seeing this. There's, I've said this before. It may have been on the show. There's usually being fast and being quick. And the difference is, you know, quick is not necessarily fast. It's just more, you know, quick feet. You can get in and out of breaks quickly, you know, things like that. There's a difference between quickness and speed. And normally with athletes, you have to pick one or the other. There is no combination of the two. And that's what's kind of crazy. When you watch Jalen Waddle, he's one of those rare gifted athletes where he is just not, he has great speed and he's very quick. And that is impressive. It catches NFL people's eyes when they see that. It's like eye candy. It pops off the screen at them. And so I've been seeing a lot of people, and you heard it on the show, going with Waddle over Ja'Marr Chase. This is actually something that's happening. Waddle is a phenomenal talent in his own right. Chase is a phenomenal talent in his own right. But we talked about the differences in their two different skill sets and what is more attractive. You know, and Gamble nailed it. You know, he's going to be a polarizing prospect. You're either going to love him or you're going to hate him. And it's because of his ability to separate and the lack thereof. Regardless, if you're not following Gamble, or Gamble on Twitter, at GamScout, you need to. He's a very good follow. He puts out all kinds of great information. The dude is constantly grinding through tape. And you got to hear him on here. He knows his shit. He's on top of it. And that's why we bring people on this show. Because they know their shit. They're on top of it. I wouldn't settle for anything less. No, man. See, I have to listen to this show, too. I have to listen to this show, too, because I have to listen to analyze it so that I can say, hey, I could do this better. You know, and that's why if I can't listen to the show, then you guys sure as hell will not be able to do that. So I think I'm going to leave you again with this point, how important it is to watch the Georgia-Alabama game this weekend. The Georgia-Tennessee, my bad. I keep bringing this up. I keep talking about it. It's important. Because this is literally, this could be the turn of the tide in the SEC East. That's how important this game is. Whoever wins this game has a chance to go on and beat Florida and win the SEC East. That's what this game is. And we're going to find out if Tennessee's there yet or if they're not. And they've got Georgia at home. It will be in Neyland Stadium with the Vol faithful representing. It's going to be fun. It is going to be electric. It is going to be fun. So do yourself a favor. Watch that game tomorrow. That will about wrap up this show as we know it, the John Vogel Show. Thank you guys for tuning in. Hey, just a couple pointers. Our listening audience is really starting to expand, and I appreciate all of you guys spreading the word around about this show, talking about it, saying, hey, listen to this. Guys, I appreciate it. And I really do sincerely mean that. Like, it has been so much fun. It has been a crazy year. You know, there was a time this year when I was wondering if I was going to actually be able to do this. You know, I'm not talking about the podcast or anything specifically. I'm talking about being in sports media in general. But here's the thing. It's you stick to your guns. You do what you know is right. And what I've discovered over the last couple of years with everything that I've done in my life is the more that you try to do that is right and good, the more God is going to keep you safe. He's going to protect you, and he's going to give you. just constantly give to him, give him credit for everything. He's the one that makes things happen. But I appreciate every single one of you guys tuning in the show. We're being heard right now. We have listeners in 10 different countries. Never thought I would say something like that. My voice is being heard in 10 different countries, and that blows my mind. 25 states now is the count. We are halfway across the country. And it's all because of you guys. I appreciate it. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you all for what you do. Let's talk on Twitter. Hit me up at John D.A. Vogel. If you want to support this show directly, there's a Patreon. And on Anchor, there's listener support where you can donate directly to this show. Guys, have a great weekend. Enjoy it. There's going to be a lot of great football. Get into it. Have fun. Enjoy your family. Spend time with them. Football is a great way to bring family and friends together. And we have nothing better but great football this weekend. So spend some great family time out there, guys. Be safe. God love you all. This is the John Vogel Show.